Well, good morning. Thank you so much for tuning in to our community radio station here at 88.5 KRFY. This is The Morning Show with Susie Prez and Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Susie. How are you doing?
I'm fine. We are co-hosts of this day, Wednesday, June 13th, and we have a guest in the studio that's going to be very interesting and appropriate timing. You want to introduce?
Very good timing. We have Sean Woodward with us. He's the superintendent of schools for the Lake Pontarea School District. Sean, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for the invite.
And we're going to be talking about how the school year went, but we also want to talk about the process for building the new five-year strategic plan that the school district is in. Part of that was a survey that was conducted during the winter, so we'll talk about those survey results a little bit and what this process is, and maybe some, I know there's some action that direction by the school board last night, so we'll get the latest on that.
The scoop, as they say. Yep, and it is a beautiful day out, and we could talk a little bit about the weather before we get into what's going on in our community. Currently, it's 52 degrees out, partly sunny today, a high of 71, with light winds later in the day, 5 to 9 miles per hour. And tonight, we have a low of 46 with a 20% chance of showers, then partly cloudy. Tomorrow, Thursday, 30% chance of showers, a high of 65. And Thursday night, partly cloudy, low of 44. And I'm looking ahead a little bit. Friday looks like there'll be a little bit of sunshine and a little bit of thunderstorms with a high of 72. But other than that, a little bit of rain, kind of intermixed with typical spring weather.
Typical June weather.
Mm-hmm.
Other things going on outside. Sunrise this morning was really early, 4:45 a.m. It'll set tonight at 8:45 p.m. Over the course of last week, we've gained 7 minutes of daylight. And we're getting really close now to the longest day of the year. It's a little more than a week away. At which point every day starts getting a little bit shorter. But we're not even going to mention that after. If we're going to kind of lay off the length of day thing that we always do here every week for at least a couple months.
And just enjoy these bright, sunny mornings and or cloudy mornings. But they're so early. It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
And if you listen, the birds are really flocking right now and doing their thing.
Oh, it's totally beautiful. My way in this morning, coming down Baldy, I passed a doe. And coming along behind her, it had to be just hours old. That little tiny fawn, little spotted fawn. It was really cool.
Good luck, little fawn.
Good luck, little fawn. I mentioned a few other things going on outside. The new moon is today. It starts at 3:45 p.m. That's when you can't see the moon at all because it's in conjunction with the sun. And if you look up at the night sky tonight, if we have a clear sky, Jupiter is still really shining bright up there, so it's the brightest star in the sky. So check up and look up and see Jupiter. And other things going on around town, Susie?
Well, there's a lot going on, but there's a lot that went on last weekend, and I think it's an appropriate moment in time to thank the Sandpoint and North Idaho community and everyone who helped make the 2018 KRFY membership drive a huge success. It was so much fun. And we had local music, interviews, friends. Lots of people came up to the station. Little kids, old kids, new faces all made the two-day live on-air broadcast a fun community event. Community radio, you know, Chris, means community support, so we want to thank everyone for that.
Yeah, and it was a ton of fun. I was in for a while. A bunch of our broadcasters were in. We had food.
Lots of food.
Lots of food.
Thank you, Julie.
Good things to drink. No alcoholic beverages, but it was kind of a party happening up here, and we'll be doing that again in about a year, but that doesn't mean people can't just pop in whenever they want to. And see what our studio is about. We're at 323 North First Avenue. And, heck, I'll throw it out there. If you're not currently a supporter, we do gratefully accept donations. And you can do that by calling us here at 265-2992. Right now you'd catch a voicemail and we'd call you back. Or, of course, you can go online to KRFY.org and donate there.
We have a handy-dandy PayPal button that says donate.
And to mention just a few other things going on around town, Saturday is kind of a big thing. It's the Chafe Bike Ride, and there's rides of 30, 80, or 150 Miles, you can still sign up. Go to chafe150.org. It's a fundraiser put on by the Sandpoint Rotary for great causes supporting education, actually.
And KRFY will be out at the Pack River store helping those riders that do the, what is it, a 30-mile?
That's the 30-mile ride.
30-mile bike ride. And they'll have treats and all kinds of things to help you make it the other 15 miles back to town.
And that's a beautiful ride through the Sully Valley if you do the 30-mile loop. Other things going on, the Challenge of the Champions bull riding and barrel racing event happens at the fairgrounds on Saturday. And, of course, we have a ton of other events happening in our town. You can see those and get details on them at our website, KRFY.org, and click on Community Calendars, or you can go to sandpointonline.com. And I wanted to mention one other little community event that's happened. The ospreys that nest at Memorial Field have been hatching on three eggs and been incubating three eggs for over a month now. And, of course, you never know how that's going to go, but in the course of the last week, since last Wednesday, three chicks hatched out. So they had a really successful hatch. The folks, there's a big group that are fans. They like to get on and watch the ospreys on the Osprey, the live webcam. They've named the chicks Kamloops, Kokanee, and Koi. And to find out why one of them is named Koi, you'd have to go to the webpage and see the little explanation in the blog notes about why we have a chick named Koi. But
is that on Sandpoint Online?
That's on Sandpoint Online. It's a cooperative venture between Sandpoint Online and the city of Sandpoint. And you can get there if you go to Sandpoint Online, or the direct link is sandpointospreys.com. Take you right there. It's pretty fun to watch the ospreys, especially now that we have chicks there, and there's a lot of activity going on with the parents feeding the chicks. They're little tiny fluff balls right now.
Little babies.
Yeah.
So I think we should get to our interview. I want to thank again Sean Woodward for coming in, Superintendent Lake Pend'Oreille School District. There's a lot to talk about in details and surveys and things like that. But right now, because it just happened last Friday, the end of the school year, why don't we have a little bit of a review from your perspective and what you're hearing out there? How did the year go, 2017-2018 academic year?
Well, of course, it was excellent. You know, it's hard when you all had asked me to be on the show to kind of think, okay, what would really summarize a year when we have 12 schools and 3,700 students or so? And it's one thing that I would encourage people to do. If you want to learn a little bit more about our schools, attend one of the graduations, because I go right to our graduation ceremonies last week at Clark Fork, Lake Pend'Oreille Alternative High School, and Sandpoint High School. And it's a phenomenal reminder of the kinds of choices our students and their families have in this community. They are such radically unique experiences for a high school education, and you will see that by attending one of those graduations. It was so gratifying to see the staff and the students and the families so excited to move on to this next stage in their lives. But I was struck by how different those schools are and how important that choice is in our community. What I'm really proud of this year is the fact that we finally, after 4 years of transitioning to new, far more rigorous learning expectations for our students, we've had some of our biggest growth and achievement gains over the last 4 years. So our system is finally becoming more aligned with these new expectations. I believe we'll have some of the highest growth gains in the state of Idaho, and some of the grade levels with the highest achievement levels as well. So that was very exciting, and it's very gratifying for all the work that the staff has done over the last 4 years to finally get aligned as we should be. The second part is, and I can get a little deeper into this if you'd like, is we've also really focused on, okay, academics are very important, but we've also got to pay particular attention to social-emotional learning. And this year, I believe that we've had one of our greatest balances ever of academics and social-emotional learning. And we know that social-emotional learning is so darn important, because your academics are impacted if you're not in a healthy space from a social-emotional standpoint. So we've got a lot going on in both of those areas right now.
So social-emotional learning, describe a little bit better about what that really is.
So really, it's simply teaching students how to relate interpersonally with others, how to take care of yourself, how to interact or with others when you're feeling a certain way, how to reach out if you need help from somebody, all of those kinds of things. And what we've done this year is, for the second year in a row, we have an actual curriculum, social-emotional learning curriculum, that builds from kindergarten all the way through eighth grade. And it's really been something that we've seen has been a positive influence when it comes to academics as well as student discipline. Our student discipline rates at the elementary level are actually going down since we've implemented this curriculum. And too often, I believe, in schools, what happens is, well, of course we teach our students how to behave and how to interact with others and how to seek help when you're feeling a certain way. That's just kind of, we're teachers, that's what we do. But the problem is we don't necessarily do it in a systematic and intentional manner. So this is what that curriculum does for us. The second part of it is, as students go into our middle school and our high schools now, we also have a component that's called Sources of Strength. It's a peer mentoring program, as well as a connections program, where more than ever before, we are trying to intentionally build healthier relationships between all of our groups of students, and we're seeing a lot of really good things come from that as well.
Are most of these social inclusion, social emotional learning, and the Sources of Strength, are these delivered, these curriculums delivered in the classroom mostly, or is it school-wide in some way? So it's mostly in the classroom.
Yeah. So basically how at the high school level, how that is set up, and it'd be a good, interesting program for you to have just focusing on this, is that some of the elements of the program are actually taught by students. So they go into their mentor-mentee groups, and it's usually an upper-class person who's working with some freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and going through elements of the curriculum. And then they're trained by one of our teachers. So it's really a peer-led kind of a situation.
I can imagine that makes a lot of sense. The students relate to each other differently
exactly.
than teacher to student.
Yeah, and the piece that, you know, that it's hard to talk about, but it is a reality, is that we know that these kinds of programs really ultimately are really just mechanisms for helping students who might feel some isolation, if you will. And today, more than ever before, as you two know, the fact of the matter, we have to deal with a lot of social isolation because of social media and people holding up with their computers and interacting that way. So we're trying to break that down and try to do things where it's like, okay, let's put the technology away. Let's learn how to interact with each other and how to problem solve together and so on and so forth. And we know that these kinds of programs do a couple of things. One, which is great, these are research-based programs that have been known to be a protective factor when it comes to youth suicide, as well as, I don't think the politically correct way to say it nowadays is anti-bullying. I'm not sure how to say it, but people understand what that is. It's been known to really reduce incidences of bullying in schools, as well as increase school safety. And that's such a big topic nowadays. And we've worked a lot on that this year as well.
On the bullying subject, how do you measure if you're seeing a decline in bullying in the schools?
It's kind of difficult, but we are required by the state of Idaho to report incidences of violence that are reported and bullying. And some people, I'm not saying bullying, some people think I am, but bullying. Mm-hmm. And so we have to track any time that comes up. So we can look at our own data. So this is only reported data, of course, but we also do a healthy youth survey every couple of years, and we monitor that and student self-reporting as well. So we recognize a decline through the data that we collect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do kids in the high school level there, how do they get chosen to be mentors?
So two ways. One, they can apply themselves, and it's broadcast. And I only happen to know because I have a soon to be senior son, and or they're nominated by staff and they're encouraged to fill out an application, and then that's selected by the teachers in charge of the mentor program.
So are these kids that maybe have a little more maturity, or they just have kind of like a demonstrated better judgment in dealing with people?
Exactly. Typically, they're going to usually be more outgoing students because they're responsible for, they'll have a group of 12 to 15 students once a month with a staff member that's in the room monitoring and supporting. But they have to be kids that are pretty confident and they're not afraid to stand up and walk kids through activities. So they're pretty natural leaders for sure.
And if you find a student that is demonstrating some of the negative things that you're talking about, bullying and other violent kind of activities, what do you do? How do you corral them in and work with that when it's so obvious?
Well, the good news is that what we found this year and last is we talk a lot with our students about if you see something that seems a little unusual or strange, say something. We're over and over and over telling students, don't be afraid to bring something up. If you see a kid that looks like they're hurting or might be displaying some behavior that you're concerned about, you have to tell somebody. And we talk to our kids about, this is just, it's called the culture of silence. So that's one of the problems that we have. People don't speak up. So, and it's a good lifelong thing for kids to practice. So we have had much more reporting than ever before, which you might think, oh my gosh, that's a bad thing. Well, no, it's really a good thing. And we've helped so many kids this year that would not have gotten the help, A, and B, we've also got to the point where we've been able to teach kids about rumors and how dangerous those are. Because most of the time, to be honest with you, I would say you track down some issues, kids are talking, et cetera, about something. Thankfully, most of the time you got something wrong and then it's the telephone game or before you know it. But we want to know about those things. But at the end of the day, we've helped so many more kids than ever before. The other piece that I would share a little bit about briefly is we also this year, for the second year in a row, have school-based mental health clinics now. And the only district in the state of Idaho that we know of that's doing that now, where kids can actually get support for any mental health issues that they may have at any one of our schools through outside agencies. And we're looking at, and this is at no cost to us, we're looking at thinking about, well, if it works there, could it also work in the future for helping kids with things like their physical needs or dental work or et cetera? Because most of the time, it's an access issue for our students. So we know that those kinds of health issues are going to impact their academics. So,
well, as you say in your mission, we are committed to the success of each child, and identifying what some of the barriers to that success are not always just academic, as you just gave us a really good picture of how to reach children and help them succeed.
Yeah. I want to talk some more about academics, but before we move on, you know, social emotional learning, you mentioned that part of that is, you know, aimed at improving school security as well. What other kinds of things is the district doing in terms of security?
Okay, so a couple of real quick things is we've had every one of our schools in the last couple of years has had an outside entity come in unannounced and try to get into our schools and see what happens. Can somebody just get in, and what are some of the safety deficiencies you might have? So we've had an outside group come in and do that for us and give us a list of things to fix, which we have for the most part. The second thing is, and this wasn't very popular, and a lot of the high school kids didn't like me much after this, but they got over it and they understand the why behind it. We finally moved into a spot where all of our schools, including Sandpoint High School, are single point of entry schools. So you cannot get into the school without going through the front door. It used to be, I mean, up until 6 months ago, you could probably get in six different ways. Which is a concern. So every school in our district is now single point of entry. The other things that we've done are just really have more to do with acting quickly, teaching our staff to act quickly if something were to happen. So we're really just, you know, the old, I don't know if this is the Red Cross thing or what, but the hope for the best, prepare for the worst. I mean, we're ready. If something were to happen, we're ready to go. The balancing act that we play, though, is to make sure that we're not living in fear around this thing. Because if you look at the data, in 99.9% of our schools, it's not an issue in the U.S., but we're prepared if it were to be an issue, for sure.
Yeah, we sure see a lot of huge media when something happens, but that kind of obscures the fact that schools really are quite safe across the country. Unfortunately, we do have some very violent acts that happen.
Exactly.
And if you've just tuned in, you are listening to The Morning Show here at 88.5 KRFY. And this is, we're talking with Sean Woodward. He's the superintendent of Lake Ponderay School District. And if you can't hear the whole show, it will be on our website later on as a podcast at krfy.org.
But Sean, let's circle back and talk some more about some of the academic highlights of the year. You mentioned that you saw some nice improvement in achievement. Talk a little bit more about how you measure that.
Yeah, so we measure that two ways. One is a nationally norm referenced assessment, which I think is really important because we want to know how our students are doing, not just within Idaho, but nationwide. We've seen our best growth gains, what's called the measurement of academic progress, and it measures relative growth. No matter where a student is when they come in at the school year, how far have we taken them? And the second big area is the state required, and that's our... it's called the SBAC assessment for reading and English language arts. So we have seen some very good gains, and I will tell you, we've narrowed it down to two areas that we're really focusing on. One, this might not surprise you, but the single biggest determinant as to whether a kid's going to do well in school is the expertise of the classroom teacher, and to ensure certain things are happening, because we know what works. So for us to scale that across our system, we spent an extraordinary amount of time the last few years working in that area. And the second is ensuring that we have really good principals, because we know the cumulative effect of really good teachers has a profound impact on students, and the cumulative effect of marginal teachers also has a pretty negative influence on students. So we have to have the principals in schools that can really support good teaching across every mm-hmm. classroom. We started the year with this mantra with our staff, and they were okay with it because our staff believes in ensuring high levels of learning for all students and to do whatever it takes. And we started the year, and I did with our admin team in August and our staff in September, with this is going to be a year of high support, but also high accountability, both. And we're going to help you get there, but we're also going to measure the effectiveness of our practice along the way so we can be fluid and change when we're not seeing the kind of learning gains that we should be seeing. And I have to hand it to our staff. They responded really, really well. And you know you're in a good place when you can talk about accountability and people say that's okay, because they know they're going to get the support as well to help them get there.
Mm-hmm. In your vision statement, you talk about the ever-changing future, and I think you've alluded to it, really having the students prepared to succeed. And what are some of the things that you've noted that are changing dramatically as we go along, very fast sometimes?
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things that kind of gets to is we really are preparing our students for jobs that do not exist yet, right? So we really talk a lot about, okay, content is really important, but content in isolation is kind of meaningless. So what we're doing is trying to figure out, okay, how do we ensure that the kids have those complex problem-solving skills and critical thinking skills when they leave our high school? And so that they can apply skills in isolation outside of complex problems, learning skills in isolation, we know doesn't mean that you can take those skills and jump into a group of people and figure out how to use those skills to solve a problem at the end of the day. So we're moving more and more into ensuring that every single day in every classroom, kids have the opportunity to solve complex problems in the context of whatever content it is that they're studying, because they're going to need those skills. So that's exciting, and that's the kind of school that I wanted to go to. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in school, we all want to be challenged that way. So we're really ensuring that when we are building our curriculum maps, that those kinds of problem-solving opportunities are just built into the regular course of a school day.
How's technology weigh in the types of both in delivering your education, but also in what you decide to teach kids? Because technology is so important now out in the workplace.
Yeah. So for us, we're pretty seamlessly now. We're a one-to-one environment. So every student does have a device, which can be taken the wrong way. So for us, we know as long as the technology is being used as a tool, because out in the workforce, that's the way it's being used, not to just surf the web and try to kind of play around on the internet or whatever, although that happens in some
games.
Work environments. That's right.
Games come to mind, yeah.
So for us, it's like, okay, how can we utilize this in such a way that kids will know that it can be a powerful tool? So for us, one of the most powerful ways we use it, because the age-old Susie's a teacher, so she knows that, how do you differentiate learning for students? So when you have 25 students in your class, they're all at varying levels. Are there ways that you can use the power of technology for adaptive learning? And the answer is yes. So when you've got a group of five or six kids back at the back table, say mathematics, and you know you've got another 20 that are working, you want them working at their instructional level. So there's so many amazing forms of adaptive technology that will help kids along while they're not with the classroom teacher. So it's the genius of and, right? It's not either the teacher or technology. I think we need to think of both and unleash the true power of technology. The other piece, and again, this will be a different show, but I'm really excited about, is we want to spend some time tearing down the walls of our schools so kids can learn from other kids across the world. We've got this access. We have fiber in all of our schools now. We have one-to-one technology. We ought to be saying, okay, we are a dot on this planet in Sandpoint, Idaho, and a beautiful dot at that. But we talk about learning so much more about the world utilizing technology to interact with others. We've got to start hitting on that.
Are there some classes or teachers that are pursuing connecting with other schools or other students afar?
Yes, and it's been amazing to watch. We just haven't done it in an intentional and systematic manner. So when you see it happening, though, the students are so excited and engaged.
One of the ways that just came to my mind is foreign language. Because not just learning the language, but learning the culture, if you could do a global access exchange with another classroom in whatever the language is, that would be really exciting for students to learn that way.
Did you guys ever do pen pals when you're in school?
Oh, yeah.
I did not, but I knew all about pen pals. Yeah.
Think about it. Think about it this way, right? How about FaceTime now? You can see your pen pal and talk to them and see their classroom, see their neighborhoods, et cetera. Just a great...
But to that language thing, I'll relay a little funny thing. I just discovered a couple of weeks ago, I have a cousin in Germany, you know, doing the ancestry thing, who doesn't speak English. And we've been kind of trading some pictures, but I've been using Google Translate to write something up, and it'll translate and I'll send it to her. And I've been saying, how's it coming across? Is it, can you understand it? And she said, hey, it's been perfect.
Wow.
So we have tools now to help us, to help the kids, you know, if they did connect with somebody in a different culture, a different language, that they could actually communicate pretty well with some of the tools that the technology provides.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. I don't know. Do we want to take a 2-minute song break?
Yeah, I think we
want
to take a little song break. We've been talking about what's happening, what's been going on during the school year. I don't know if there's anything you want to shout out about this last school year before we take this break, because I want to come back and talk about the 5-year strategic plan.
Yeah, the biggest is just this time of year, just a great big thank you. Hopefully we have some staff that will listen to this, that we have the most incredible staff that I can imagine working with across our district. We've got people working on our grounds, in our classrooms, in the front office, et cetera. And I have a lot to compare it to. I've been here 6 years and I was 20 years in another state, and this is my fourth district. The people here just roll their sleeves up and want to do whatever it will take to ensure really good education for our students. And it's a culture of improvement. And I didn't start this. It happened before I got here. So I just got to come in and ensure that we continue with that mindset. So thank you to all of our staff out there for sure.
Yeah. Shout out to our teachers and faculty. Thank you for taking care of our kids and helping them to succeed.
Absolutely. And congratulations on a successful movement forward and a successful school year. We're going to hear a very short song. This is Bobby Herb. It's called Sunny. And we'll be back with Sean Woodward from the Lake Ponderay School District and get a glimpse into the 5-year plan, strategic plan. And that was Bobby Herb, Sunny. And this is the morning show at 88.5 KRFY.
Yes, with Chris and Susie. And we're talking this morning with Sean Woodward. He's the superintendent of the Lake Ponderay School District. First part of our show, we were talking about how the school year went. We want to take a look ahead now in a big process that the school district has underway. They're developing their 5-year strategic plan. We got caught up on where you're at with that, but I wanted to start out here with mentioning that, you know, there was a pretty big effort to get community participation and hear from the community what they think the school district should be focusing in on. You had a series of meetings in January, the public meetings, and you had a large poll online, and you were, I'm sure you're taking all kinds of feedback in different ways. Sean, tell us what you learned in that survey process.
Yeah, so it was gratifying that so many people took part in our three stakeholder engagement meetings. We had, over the course of three evenings, we had about 75, 80 people show up, which is really actually quite good for what we get in our community. But the reminder was that people also will be more than willing to do surveys. And we had over 1,200 respondents now. Most of those came within a couple of weeks. So people really weighed in that way. So,
and that was conducted online.
Online, exactly. And we sent out some paper surveys as well to people that that still are saying, I do not want a computer. Will you send me one in the mail? I said, no problem.
Yeah.
So we learned an awful lot, and I will just briefly share what the questions that we asked. We asked, what are the greatest challenges or issues the district will face over the next 5 years? What are the most important skills and abilities students must master to be prepared for a successful future? What evidence should our district use to evaluate the quality of our education? As well as some questions about financial priorities. So it was a forced choice activity, as well as open-ended responses we received as well. But the greatest challenges, as might not be a surprise to you, would be maintaining our physical facilities. That was the number one response over and over and over. The second one was hiring and retaining high-quality educators in an increasingly competitive market, which it is getting more and more competitive. Providing a rigorous educational program was also one of the top areas. The other area that I thought was very interesting, what are the most important skills and abilities students must master? 5 years ago when we did this survey, it had more to do with content knowledge. This time, the number one thing that came up in this survey was self-reliance, independence, personal responsibility, ethics, and accountability. And the second was the ability to organize, prioritize, set goals, and manage time. And the third was ability to work well with others, resolve conflicts and challenges. The traditional academics were further down the list, and that's a flip-flop from 5 years ago, which I thought was kind of fascinating. But good.
But good, yeah, because those skills, I answered that question, and I kind of ranked those things pretty high as well, because in my mind, those skills enable the student to succeed in the academics.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's really going to influence our work over the next 5 years. The evidence that we should use to evaluate the quality of education, people really want us to measure individual student growth over time as they progress through the grade levels. But also, and this is something very different for us, they want us to measure student success after high school, which I've been in other districts that will actually track students in their 4 to 5 to 6 years after they graduate. And it takes quite a bit of detective work, but our community is telling us, no, we want to know how our students are doing. So we're going to be researching this summer. There's all kinds of things that you could do, but most likely you have to hire somebody to do this work, that you find out what are kids really doing? Because we only know what they're doing really the first year. Do they go to the armed forces? Do they go to a technical school or a college? We lose track after that, but really, what are they doing 4 or 5 years down the line? So that'll be interesting work as well. Hmm. And then let's see if there's anything. Oh, the other piece that I thought would be interesting to share as well would be that the open-ended questions, most people that did the survey also responded to the open-ended questions being, what are we doing well, and what do we need to do to improve? And so really quickly, what are we doing well? The themes were as follows: advanced opportunities for students. People over and over were saying we're doing a really good job communicating and seeking input. So that's great. I will also say that people said that was a growth area as well. So it was a theme for the good and the bad. Staff excellence came up over and over, extracurricular activities, as well as just a general really good education. In your opinion, what could we do to improve? Increase opportunities for students to follow a career path rather than just the college path. Increase articulated paths to certification fields in the professional technical area. That, we believe, is a communication problem for us, because once we explain what we're doing, people are like, whoa, I had no idea. People say we need to have a better long-range plan for our facilities, and then increase support for students needing help with mental health issues, and then also increasing communication. We disaggregated the data as well, and I won't get into that, but we have it on our website if you want to know what did students say versus staff versus parents.
Or versus parents or versus community members that maybe don't have kids even. Yeah,
exactly. And we were pleased that we had so many people respond to the survey that listed as community members that did not have any connection to the school. We had around 200 at-large community members, I guess, as well.
Those are people that might just be taxpayers or helping support the schools, but they're interested in how their investment is doing.
Exactly.
You mentioned the challenge faced to recruit and keep teachers. What are some of the significant things that a school district can do to, besides pay them well and things like that? What do teachers need to feel that support so they also think and feel that their jobs are important and that they're having some satisfaction in the work they're doing?
You bet. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is, last night our school board actually approved our 5 big priority areas for the next 5 years. And one of them is recruit, train, and retain highly effective personnel. And so that's a great question. I mean, we will be action planning all summer to develop our strategies and initiatives related to each of these priority areas. But for sure, some of the things that are really important are induction and mentoring programs. And some people know that as onboarding programs or whatever for new staff, so that people really can feel connected to the community and to the school district from the get-go. So quality mentoring programs and induction programs, quality professional development programs. And I mentioned support and accountability before in this program. People do not mind being held accountable to good work as long as they feel supported and we help them get to that spot so they have the skills and abilities to do what we're asking. So that's known to be really important. And another is, you mentioned people sometimes go straight to compensation. Well, that definitely helps, because we compete against so many other school districts, and we have to be aware of that. But also just general working conditions, if you will, and just morale. And a lot of that has to do with establishing a collaborative culture in our school buildings. And you have to have a highly skilled principal to do that, and to build teacher teams that are working together towards a common goal. And I talked about ensuring high levels of learning for all of our students. That's our big goal. And one of our vehicles right now are professional learning communities. And when teachers feel tied into a collegial team all working towards the same goal, people want to stick around and stay together because they're feeling supported. So those, to some areas.
So if teachers had a language arts club, so to speak, they might feel, well, when I have a challenge or if I don't know what to, exactly to do, I have this group of folks that have done it or are also in the same place and wonder, they can join forces and find out. And so the principal is in a building is kind of the key to that collaborative teaching.
Very important. A lot of parents will want to know, well, what do you do on those Wednesday early release days? That's what we do. We have teacher teams working together, and they're basically working on four questions. What do we want all students to learn? How in the world do we know if they're learning it? What do we do if they're not learning it? And then, of course, what about those students that already know it? How will we take them to the next level? So they're grappling with those four critical questions. That's the work.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned their board outlined five emphasis areas. So let's hear about some of the others.
You bet. One is, it's like you can say, well, this is a no-brainer, Sean, of course. Ensuring academic success for every student. And I keep talking about ensuring high levels of learning. That, people say it, but you have to mean it. What does that really mean when it comes to closing the opportunity gap for kids? We have a problem right now. We're like many other districts in that all needs to mean all. But unfortunately, when you look at some of our demographics, we have a gap between students of poverty and students with different economic situations that we need to close. So ensuring academic success for every student, that means not just our college track, but career track as well. Ensuring that we are continually utilizing research-based instructional practices and monitoring those things. But basically, the ensuring academic success for every student just means what are we doing for all students and in a really inclusive model. So we'll be action planning around that. The second is providing safe and innovative learning environments. That does not just mean improving our facilities and modernizing our schools. That means social emotional support for students as well. That's a safe and innovative learning environments. The third I already mentioned, the recruit, train, and retain. The fourth is very common thread as well through our survey was utilizing our resources effectively and being fiscally responsible. What does that look like over the next 5 years? We had our annual budget was approved last night, and we have a lot of work in that area. I think we do a great job, but we're not communicating probably enough in that area. And the final one is just engaging our communities. And that means increasing our partnerships, continuing to provide more meaningful two-way communication systems for our stakeholders, and then improving both our internal and our external communication. We haven't gotten that dialed in as well as we'd like, and we have a lot of work to do, so we'll be doing a lot of planning for that this summer as well.
So under the safe and innovative learning environments, we talked earlier about the social-emotional learning programs that are already underway. The big question, a piece of that emphasis would be facilities. So, exactly. You know, we tried to do a big facility upgrade and they got shot down at the polls. It's a little less than 2 years ago now. It is part of the strategic five-year plan going to be how do we upgrade our schools? Because we do have some schools that are very aged and in need of either replacement or renovation.
For sure. And, you know, you brought up that 2 years ago. I thought that was on my birthday, August 30th. That was a tough birthday. But experience should be one of the best teachers that we have. And we learned so much from that. And I'm really excited to move forward. And we've given so many opportunities for people to tell us, what did we do wrong, in your opinion? Tell us. And we've gotten those themes from our community. And one of the biggest, you mentioned it, was too much too soon. And that's totally understandable. So we are right now, there was an application process to be a part of a facility study committee. It's a very large group and a very diverse group. And we're going to have about, I think, 25 community members from all over the community that are going to be on this in this group. So it's going to be a very interesting facilitation slash leadership challenge, but I'm excited. We'll have our first meeting in August. And what's different about this group this time is it's not a hand-selected group or nominated group. It's if you want to be on the group, you apply, but it's going to be a lot of work and a lot of meetings, and we're going to dig into the issues. So
the main criteria is making that commitment to stay engaged, because a lot of times folks who are critical of some of the public decisions come down, they aren't engaged. They don't know that a ton of work has gone into something in advance of a proposal being out on the table. So hopefully those 25 folks are saying, yeah, we're going to buckle down and we're going to see this whole process through.
Yeah, they really were. A lot of people called and asked questions about it when I explained how much work it would be. They're like, well, no, I'd like to stay engaged and involved. Maybe in other ways. And I explained to them, well, the other difference would be after every single meeting, we will be giving a board report so people can come and hear what we're talking about, and that we will get feedback from the community after every meeting. If they want to come and weigh in what we talked about, that's great. Oddly enough, you guys all knew we had some very outspoken critics. None of them applied to be on our committee, and I was disappointed.
Oh, but, no kidding. Yeah. I just assumed that some of that 25 would be some of the folks who were so critical last time.
Not outspoken, but some, I think, really did have some definite concerns. But I thought, given the opportunity, maybe some more of those people would
apply. Well, I would, let me throw out the idea that even if they didn't want to get on the committee, finding some way to engage them would probably be important.
I agree, for sure. Yeah.
Well, we're going to be running out of time in just a few minutes here, but what else do you want to tell us about this process of building the strategic 5-year plan? Of course, you do currently have a plan this is going to succeed that plan.
Yeah, and so one thing that's really important, I think, for our staff to know, too, is people get worried, oh my gosh, a new plan. It's like, no, well, it doesn't mean we're radically changing everything. It means we're going to continue to build. Some might just simply be keep doing the things that we are doing that are getting really good results and get better at those things. And one thing I do want to note, it'll be August, at a board meeting in August, we will actually be sharing our metrics that would demonstrate our success or lack thereof. So if anyone's interested, how are we going to measure these things? That'll be an August board meeting. And then the finer details we'll be working on all summer, because these are just 5 priority areas. And now it's like, all right, what are the strategies and initiatives to make this thing happen?
It's a lot of challenge to create a culture of learning, a culture for learning, where all the parts come together. The teachers feel supported, the children and the parents feel this is a good place for our children to be, and the students coming out from high school feel that they do have the tools for success. And so we have to commend our school district. You know, one of the things I notice about you, Sean, is you always come in with a lot of enthusiasm. I hope that this job supports you also in gaining steps forward to your goals, the goals of the school district, creating that culture for learning and of learning.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Are you having fun?
I am having a lot of fun, for sure. I mean, when the bottom line is kids, right? In my opinion, you can't go wrong. So thank you.
One of the things I notice about high school students is their school is their school. They always say, I'm going to my school. And there's a sense of this is part of their home now, and this is where they're moving to out into the world. So it's a stepping stone to their world adventures.
I love that.
Yeah, I see that so often.
And you mentioned early on going to the different graduation ceremonies. I do want to say, even if you don't have kids in school, going to a graduation ceremony and just picking up on that excitement and that sense of the future opportunity that these kids have as they come out of school is exciting. Sure, across the board. Yeah.
Yes. I would just be there crying the whole time, even if I didn't know one graduate. It's so beautiful. And their accomplishments. Well, thank you again, Sean Woodward, Superintendent at Lake Pend'Oreille School District. And I'd like to also hear, and we'll bring in someone from the Homebound. I think it's called your program of homeschooling program.
Oh,
I think
you bet.
That's something we want to do eventually.
And there's another education topic we want to circle back on, the Panhandle Alliance for Education. They did a pretty big community survey as well. A little different focus, more on how can a a third-party group like the Panhandle Alliance for Education be effective in supporting good education. But also they polled what the general population really knows about how our schools are funded, because that goes to a lot of questions about how we operate our schools. Had some pretty interesting results, and we hope to get some folks from the Panhandle Alliance for Education in here in the next several weeks.
Well, thank you. We're almost out of time. We're going to go out with a song, but we also want to remind you that on the morning show tomorrow, Thursday, June 14th, hosts Jim Healy and Jack Peterson will visit with the executive director of the festival at Sandpoint, Dinah Wall, get an update on how things are going. And then on Friday, there's an extra special, extra interview. Jim Healy will be in the studio with some folks from a vacation Bible camp.
You know, we have the morning show is every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but we have so much interest and so much going on in the community. We're kind of thinking we might need to have a fourth morning show. That's in a bit of my mind.
It's Susie. Coming up, too. And I was thinking of talking to you about that. Yeah. But also tomorrow at 3 o'clock, I'll be interviewing the folks that will be playing at the Panada that evening, the Mudbound Ramblers, I think they're called. And then on Friday morning at 10, I'll be doing another musical interview. Both of those will be with music live in the studio. So lots going on here.
Lots going on. And of course, we just had our annual membership drive. It's not too late. If you think community radio is really important, you could still call us up and make a contribution, 265-2992, or hit our website, carefy.org, because this is a completely community-supported radio station. It's non-commercial, no tax money. It goes just based on our volunteers and our donors. So thank you all that have contributed.
Yeah, it's outstanding. And seeing the value of community radio, again, we're not corporate or commercial. Mm-hmm. We have none of that. So we're going to go out with a song, John Denver, Sunshine on My Shoulders. And you'll probably hear a little tiny bit of the next song, which is Brian White singing You Are My Sunshine. We hope you have a beautiful day. We'll see you back here next Wednesday morning.
Bye now.
Bye.